Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, hi, everyone, and welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Lloyd Edge, founder and director of Oz Property Professionals, and author of the best-selling book, Positively Geared, around the topic, how to build a multi-million dollar property portfolio from a 40K deposit. That was a mouthful. Lloyd, how are you?
Very well, Saul. How are you going?
Yeah, great. Thanks. Yeah, it's fantastic to have you on the podcast today. Thanks so much.
Oh, great to be here. No, I'm really looking forward to having a chat.
Yeah, likewise. So what we before we dive into the topic, I guess we'll if you'd just like to give everyone who doesn't, which might be many people who are listening to this, like a bit of an overview of, I guess, who you are, what you do, and then we'll dive into more of the detail as we go in the podcast.
Yeah, sure. So I'm essentially a property investor, been in the market for around 20 years, built up a substantial property portfolio, which is valued at probably around about the $14 million mark at the moment. It's gained a little bit this year with the way property prices have been going. Formerly, I was a teacher, so I haven't always been in the property industry, but I was building up my portfolio on the side while I was a teacher, knowing that being a teacher, I wasn't going to have that financial stability that I wanted in the future. And that allowed me to essentially retire from teaching when I got the passive income that basically was more than what my salary as a teacher was. I started my business as a buyer's agent, and I was essentially now mixing two passions, which is education and property. So basically educating people about property, helping them buy property, making strategic decisions, and helping them achieve their own life goals.
Yeah, fantastic. So it's sort of safe to say that was actually going to be something I was going to ask a little bit later, but you know, it's a good sort of segue, I guess, into what your inspiration was, but you kind of answered it, you know, in terms of that idea of helping people too, I guess. Is that right? Like in educating and helping?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, you know, I was sort of felt like I was stuck on a bit of a treadmill there for a while. I was on a relatively low income, couldn't really see a big future at one stage. And I wanted to try to become more financially stable, so I wasn't reliant on a small amount of superannuation or the pension or anything like that. So for me, it was getting educated around property and then working out how property can actually help me achieve that financial freedom. And, you know, as an educator, I've always been interested in and really loved and passionate about helping people. So for me, going into to property as a career in my business is really about helping people, trying to replicate what I've done myself. Because I do get a lot of people that come to me and they're in situations where they can't see a way forward. They're on low incomes. They feel they're just stuck in a rut, working 9 to 5. And how can they see a way forward to buy their own home, for example, or to fund their kids' education and even put any money. So it's really about putting a strategic plan in place and having property as a vehicle that can help them to achieve that.
Yeah, I suppose. I guess is it right in sort of saying that like a part of that too, whilst it might not be, you're not like a financial planner, but at the same time, if you're going to have a strategic plan for these sort of things, there's certainly a part of that that, you know, slips over into that area too, really, isn't there? You know, in terms of actually working out how to do it, because that would be, you know, I know from, you know, I guess my own experience and other people, other family members and friends, like that very point about you have this, you know, kind of lofty goal, or they hear you saying, you know, you can do this, but they, you know, just how to begin, like what do you do?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we'll talk about this later, but one of the chapters in my book, Positively Geared, is called The Dream Team. And it's about putting a good team of people around you that can help you get there. So for me, like I mentioned, I'm not a financial planner. So I'm in the property space. I'm qualified in property. However, you need to also have a good mortgage broker, a good financial planner, a good accountant, a good solicitor around you who can help you get to where you want to get to and understand what your goals are. And it all does start from strategy. It does start from, you know, what your goals are, and then, you know, what your finances are like, how much you can borrow from the bank, what you can do with your money, and having that financial plan in place. And then that's where they then come to me and we look at property strategy. And I work together in that team with, you know, my client's financial planner and their broker and so on. So it's about having a number of people advising you there, having professionals there. It's certainly not about just sort of one person trying to do everything there. It's about having a good strategic team around you.
Yeah, yeah. And that comes back to trust too, doesn't it? You know, you have to trust people. Absolutely. I mean, that's a pretty big part of it.
It's a massive part of it. And of course, in the real estate industry, you know, it's quite well known for, you know, having, you know, probably untrustworthy people or sharks out there. But, and that's also the same as, you know, the financial services industry. So you do need to be careful with that. And I'm very careful with who I align myself with and who I work with, because at the end of the day, you know, you want to get a really good result for your clients. So you've got to make sure that, you know, you're recommending the right people to work with them. And essentially, you know, most of my clients work with my own personal mortgage broker, for example. So I am referring my clients to people that I trust myself because I use them myself.
Well, it's a reflection on you too, isn't it? You know, ultimately, like if you say, I trust this person, you know, and then they turn out to be not so trustworthy, you know, I mean, but that's never going to happen. Generally people, like, you know, just in very broad experience, if you, with a few exceptions, if you end up finding somebody's great, you get on with them. Generally people know, you know, if there's people that you trust and they do a great job and, you know, that's all that you kind of need to know in one respect, but that comes with time too, I guess, doesn't it? Like you don't always know until you have actually done a job with somebody, like at the very first early point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you definitely don't know what someone's like until you've actually sort of worked with them. But that's why getting referrals from people is such an important thing. So quite often, you know, if someone wants to know who to work with, they'll actually go and ask their neighbour or a friend, or they'll ask someone at the Sunday afternoon barbecue, who do you recommend as a mortgage broker? Because people trust their friends who may have had an experience with someone else. You know, a large part of, you know, my business and people who work with me are basically referrals. You know, people who have had experience working with me, so they refer their friends and their colleagues and things like that. So it is all about trust and things like that. And I think you can rely on things a lot better if you know people who have had those good experiences. But at the end of the day, yeah, you won't really know until you've actually had that experience with them. But at the end of the day, if you've had a really good experience with someone, then you know that you know, you can rely on them for the future. You can refer them to your friends, and you can have quite a good network of people. By the end of the day, it's really is you know, it's your future there. So you need to make sure you are working with the right people.
Yeah, well, it's the biggest, you know, it is really the biggest investment that anyone ever makes, isn't it? You know, in their first house, or then future properties, or then what you're talking about, especially then too, because there's more. You know, with more money and everything that comes with that, there's more risk as well. But like, what are your thoughts about, you know, that idea of risk too, say being a property developer too, because I would imagine, a lot of people would perhaps never want to enter into that because they've heard stories or they've just, or had experiences, or once again, know other people who haven't had great experiences where it's been, they haven't realized there's been a certain amount of risk. Like, what would you probably say to them as to maybe to alleviate some of those ideas that they might have if they really want to do it, but they're a little bit worried about, like, risk?
Yeah, that's right. A lot of people have heard, you know, stories that have gone wrong, and everyone knows someone else has invested in a type of property that didn't go very well, or the market went backwards, or the property went bad and things like that. But really, you need to, and that's why it really comes down to strategy and understanding what you're trying to do. In terms of mitigating risk, you know, if you're buying a property in a, you know, good location, it's got good government spending good infrastructure there. You've got good amenities there. There's plenty of industries that drive the town. So you're not just investing in a mining town that might collapse, but you're investing where there's several industries of growth, and you're buying in school catchment zones, and you're not buying in flood zones or under flight paths. There's all sorts of things to mitigate risks there. Yeah. And that can go a long way, because a lot of the experiences that people have had that have gone wrong might be when people have maybe bought something off the plan, an apartment off the plan, and it didn't go so well, or they overpaid for something, or they bought in the wrong location in a regional or a mining market. There's usually something around that. And also not having a strategy in place, not understanding why you're buying a particular asset, because the asset you're buying really needs to underpin exactly what you're trying to achieve, and also be able to help you get into the next property moving forward. So are you buying a growth asset? Are you buying for cash flow? Are you going to be able to force equity into this property? Is this a development opportunity? Are you going to build a duplex on the block, or are you going to put a granny flat there, or are you going to renovate the property? You need to have a strategy about how that's going to help you move forward and what the purpose of it is in your portfolio.
Yeah, exactly. And there's that same theme again, strategy. Yeah, it all comes back to having that that plan, doesn't it? It sounds so sensible. I mean, it makes perfect common sense. But how often have you come across where people have, say, no strategy or very little strategy? Is that something common?
It is pretty common. A lot of people come to me, they've had no strategy with properties that they've bought in the past. And that's why they've maybe bought a brand new house and land package that someone was selling them because it had a glossy brochure, or they bought off the plan, or they just bought a property because they thought that it would go up in value. And we've learned that not all properties go up in value. It has to be the right sort of property. And also buying the right property for the right demographic. So, you could be in a really good suburb, but if you're buying a one-bedroom unit in a suburb where it's mainly families living in 4 and 5 bedroom homes, then you're buying the wrong property. You need to make sure that you're buying, a family home in a family oriented suburb and things. So it's about buying for the right demographic. And even that's a strategy as well. And people don't kind of understand that. There's a lot more to looking at a suburb, looking at the growth rates and the vacancy rates, and then looking at, the government infrastructure and the rising population there, and jobs growth and things. And then, that might be a good area to invest. But if you don't buy the right property in that location, then you won't do that well. Even like investment grade properties are important. So like we covered, not buying in flood zones, for example, not buying cars. You don't want to buy on a busy road either. You should be buying in a quiet road, quiet street, those sort of things. Because if you buy on a busy road, it's likely to get less growth and be harder to sell than a property in a quiet street. So there's so many micro elements within a suburb that will affect how your property performs.
Yeah, sure. So do you, like as a buyer's agent, and actually before I ask this question, I'll just say, like, for those who don't know, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who know what a buyer's agent is, but for those who don't actually know what a buyer's agent is, can you just explain to everyone what a buyer's agent's role is?
Well, essentially, a buyer's agent is on the opposite end of the spectrum than a real estate selling agent.
Yep.
So we're there for the buyer. So whereas a selling agent is trying to get the best price for the vendor, for the seller of a property, a buyer's agent is there to get you the right property at the right price, and basically be on your side the whole way, do all the negotiations and everything like that. But a good buyer's agent should be doing a lot more than that. So it's really about, like, if you're buying an investment property, for example, then it's about then finding the best place to invest for your budget at that point in time, and then finding the best investment grade property within that location. That might mean sourcing out 20 or 30 properties before they find a short list of properties for you. A good buyer's agent will also have a lot of really good real estate agent contacts where they can get opportunities off market to present you opportunities that are not listed online. And then, of course, one of the true value that a buyer's agent can bring is getting you to understand the true market value of a property. And the true market value of a property has little to do with the sales price guide of a property or the auction price guide. So you really need to understand the market, what the comparable sales have been doing, usually over the last 6 months, but in the case of the current markets, you really need to know what they've been doing over the last week or the last 2 weeks, because the prices have just been going, you know, gangbusters week by week. So really understanding that to making sure that your client's not going to pay too much for the property. Now, buyer's agents also help people buy their own family home. So, you know, someone will come to us and, you know, give us a brief of exactly what they're looking for in a home, the type of suburb, their budget, and we'll go out and find that property for them, save the legwork. Essentially, it means that, you know, you don't need to be giving up all your Saturdays looking through open homes. You just give a buyer's agent the brief and we can go and locate those properties, present your shortlist and show you through those properties at a time that suits you. That might be, you know, during the week, after hours, so you're not tramping through open homes with people. So there's a lot of value there. And on top of that, it's also the strategy to make sure that you actually are getting a, you know, good property that's going to actually suit your strategy over the long term. Not all buyer's agents do that. So it really comes down to getting the right sort of buyer's agent that's going to suit your goals going forward.
Yeah, sure. Are most of your clients around your local area down in Sydney, or do you deal with people, you know, much wider, like Australia-wide and overseas as well?
Yeah, all around the world. So we've got clients in every state and territory in Australia. And then we've got expats and overseas clients and everything. So we've got clients in America and the UAE, Singapore, England, yeah, Europe. But it comes down to, you know, if they're buying a home, then obviously we service clients in Sydney for home purchases. If they're buying investment properties, then there's plenty more locations that we can serve them. But it doesn't matter where they live. When you buy an investment property, it's about their strategy, what they're trying to achieve. And then we look at what investment will suit them the most, whether it's buying an existing property that they might want to renovate or a block of land that they're going to develop on. And that comes down to strategy. But, yeah, the clients come from anywhere, essentially.
Yeah, sure. I would imagine, it's always kind of struck me that the idea of having a buyer's agent is so incredibly sensible, but it still doesn't seem to be, from my perspective anyway, it still doesn't seem to be the norm. You know, it always seems that you know, that should be the norm for how people buy and sell, because it makes you know, so much more sense that someone would go to a specific person to help them for buying as opposed to the same person. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Because I'm not exactly aware of the history in Australia of how long buyer's agents have really even been a thing. Could you kind of expand on that? Because I think it's an interesting point in that it seems so sensible, but it seems not sensible to me that it's not more widely done or used, like that it's more common.
Yeah, absolutely. So buyer's agents actually are the norm in other countries such as America, but certainly not the norm in Australia at the moment, but it's becoming more prevalent. Buyer's agents have been around since the late 90s in Australia, but it's probably been over the last 10 years that they've become more prevalent, and particularly over the last 5 years that they're becoming much more prevalent, and a lot more, you know, real estate agents and the Real Estate Institute now really recognise your buyer's agents as being integral to a search. I guess there's a cost to using a buyer's agent, but yeah, there's a lot of value within that cost. And again, it needs to come down to finding the right buyer's agent who can suit your needs. And that's maybe one of the reasons that buyer's agents is not necessarily the norm, because there is that cost of using a buyer's agent on top of the property purchase. But what the value that the buyer's agent can add can be quite huge. And quite often, you know, you can save more than buyer's agent fee in what they can negotiate off the purchase price, you know, in the right property, in the right market. If it's a very bullish market, that may not always be the case, but what a buyer's agent will do is stop you from paying too much for the property and also find you the right property that will perform. So, you know, if you're looking for an investment, then it's about finding the right property that's uh, that is that suits your strategy. So if you're going for a mixture of growth and cash flow, then you know, buyer's agent will find you the right property and get you to understand why that's going to achieve what's you know, how it's going to help you achieve your goals. Whereas if you just go and buy a property yourself, you might be thinking, oh, I'll buy the property close to home so I can check on it and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, that doesn't really make much sense. But a buyer's agent will provide you with enough research and data around a property, wherever the location is, that you'll end up getting to know that location much better than, you know, where you live, for example. And I often give this test to my own clients because people often think they know where they live quite well. But if I ask, and I've never had anyone answer this question correctly for me yet, out of asking it hundreds of times, if I, you know, ask them what is the vacancy rate of your suburb and what is the history of growth over the last 10 years of your suburb, they can't answer that question. So people don't really know the suburb very well where they live. But when they buy an investment property, they'll know, they'll have all that data, all that information, so they'll know those stats really well. So, you know, the research the buyer's agent will do for you to provide you, you know, the best investment property is quite integral, and you get really, you're really well educated there. You know, at the end of the day, it is about the value that a buyer's agent can add. It is definitely more prevalent. And the real estate agent context, I mean, even at the higher end, in some of the more exclusive suburbs, where a lot of those properties are just simply, they don't come onto the market, and you just need those real estate agent contacts to find you the right properties, that's where good buyer's agents come in handy as well, because otherwise you won't find those properties yourself.
Yeah, insider knowledge. And I suppose, like, you could almost argue really too that, especially if you're overseas and you're an expat and you and especially in the current environment too, like, people want to return to Australia, they've been living overseas, that it's almost a must to have like a buyer's agent, because you may have been in a certain area, or you want to move to a new state, like you were down in New South Wales and you want to move up to Queensland, and you kind of know what it's like, but you don't really have that insider knowledge and just more intensive knowledge of the market.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's certainly for people that are moving, you know, back to Australia or moving from interstate. And, you know, I've had clients that have moved from Brisbane to Sydney or from Adelaide to Sydney, for example, and they want us to find a home. We're on the ground to find those properties. You know, if you're moving interstate, you're not really there. I mean, if you're looking for a home to live in, you know, just ringing up the agents and seeing what's available isn't going to help you that much. But if they're interstate, you know, we can do FaceTime with our clients through every property. So they're really getting visual. And once we find a property they really like, they might fly over and then, you know, inspect it with their family. We put an offer or, you know, come to the auction or whatever. But yeah, there's a lot of value add from, you know, from that perspective too, because it is about being on the ground. And it's crucial to find a buyer's agent who does know the area that you want to buy in, because a good buyer's agent will actually know the streets, what streets are good, what are bad streets, where the good amenities are, you know, where the good clubs are, where to stay away from, you know, where the housing commission is that you may not want to buy near and everything. So there's a lot of value out there. There's a whole heap of things that people don't think about that's really integral when you're buying property, and a buyer's agent can assist you with all that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, so say with especially on that general sort of topic of not only people coming back from overseas, but people wanting to, like, either sell their property now or buy a new property. What's your opinion of how the current property market is likely to evolve? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what's your, like, how do you see that over, say, the next year or so transforming? Because the market's obviously pretty hot right now, and there's a lot happening.
Yeah, there's a lot happening in the market. It's quite crazy at the moment, and not just in the capital cities, but across all the regional and coastal locations as well. A lot of things driving that: historically low interest rates. People have not been able to go overseas on holidays or quite often even interstate, so they've got more money to sort of invest. You know, people also probably contemplating their lives a bit after the pandemic and sort of buying, you know, upgrading their homes or buying investment properties. There's all those government incentives and builder grants. That's all contributed to the, to where the markets are going and everything like that. The Reserve Bank saying that they would keep interest rates on hold for the next 3 to 4 years. That may change. One of the things that's really been driving the growth, though, is from owner-occupiers. So only about 23% of loans have been written for investors. Now, if that increases, which actually is starting to increase now, if that gets up to about 30%, that's when APRA would be likely to step in and start making more restrictions on the lending. And that would then be able to slow things down. So there are those measures in place that could actually slow things down in the market if need be from that. But at this stage, I think things are going to keep sort of moving for the next 3 to 6 months. I've seen a bit of a change at the moment. There's been a little bit of a slowdown in the growth rates in quite a few of the markets at the moment. And there's just been a few more vendors open to negotiations, prior to auction and things like that. So a few sort of changes at the moment, but I do see quite a bit of growth still happening for the next sort of 3 to 6 months. And then potentially, it will run out of steam eventually like any cycle does. But it's quite amazing because, last year nobody wanted to do anything because they thought the markets were going to crashed by 40% and everything like that. So, those people who actually bought properties last year, they're actually laughing now because they're the ones that have done really well.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Like it's an interesting lesson, I suppose you could say, in just not assuming anything. You've got the pandemic comes, it has a huge impact on the economy and the world at large. And people's, like you were saying too, like people's perspective on what they want to do with their lives. And then that has an impact in any number of ways of either selling up and moving or, in even investing more. Like, have you seen is there any interpretation that you've sort of seen in the market of, perhaps, things like the pandemic and everything that really happened last year, having an increase in people investing, or any other trend in the market, like a selling up, moving to the country, or sort of whatever trend? Have you seen something like that?
There's definitely a trend of people moving to the country. I think a couple of things there. One is, it's more cost effective to buy into the country. So people, not being able to afford to buy in cities such as Sydney and Melbourne, moving to some of those regional centres, it's more affordable. But what's allowing them to do that is the ability to be able to work from home that a lot of businesses have been. Now, whether that's a trend that's going to continue long term is sort of, no one's got a crystal ball there, but that's certainly been happening. People have been getting up and sort of moving. That's one part of it. But the other part of it, people have been reevaluating their lives, as we discussed before. And I think some people have just sort of been up and moving their families and thinking, life's too short. Let's just get out of the big smoke and let's go and buy a bigger plot of land, bigger house, and pay less money for it out in a regional or a coastal location there. So those trends have definitely been very prevalent. And definitely seeing a lot of that. And I see that every day as a buyer's agent, because we're out there in both the regional and the city markets buying properties and also speaking to agents and sort of seeing what's coming on the market for sale and everything. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it's funny actually too, because I would imagine in sort of some ways it may have been one of the best little boosts to growth that regional centres may have had for quite a while too, like in its own weird way.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. Yeah, no, there's been probably many positives come out of this pandemic, and I think we're very lucky in Australia to be in the situation that we're in.
Yeah, for sure.
It certainly has shown some positive things with the way way the markets are, and I think generally from a lot of the studies that have been done, there's a lot of the families are actually feeling like they've got more money in their pockets now as well, so people feel more wealthy. We went into that recession last year that only lasted a couple of months and we were straight back out of it. So first recession we've had since 1990, but it was a short-lived recession, and suddenly the housing market started to boom from about October, and we haven't looked back since.
Yeah, I know. I've reflected on that too, and things that you hear in the news and just from hearsay, that's a really interesting point, because I guess in one respect it perhaps highlights things that you spend that you don't necessarily observe, like, because I'm sure I'm guilty of this too, that you spend X on various kind of things, and then when you don't, you're not really keeping track of it, you don't realize how much potentially you could be saving if you did a little bit less of this and a little bit less of that. Then all of a sudden something like the pandemic comes along and you've got all this extra money, and like, how did that happen? Like, I haven't had a wage increase, and I'm not, you know, it's pretty much the same. In fact, and then for some people it's actually less, because initially there may have been, well, in certain industries anyway, like a bit of a downturn, but somehow you got more money, you know, and then, you know, that has some impact on the property market, you know, as we were talking about.
Well, that's right. And it's interesting because some people have had a wage increase that's been either frozen, so there's been no wage increase, or the increase has been less than what inflation has been. So they've been gone backwards in a sense. But they've still had money to sort of invest in the property market. So there's definitely that feeling of wealth, you know, going around. And I guess one of the other things that I didn't mention before that's quite common at the moment is FOMO. You know, people just wanting to jump into these markets because they're worried that they're going to miss out on this growth. And that's driving driving a lot of these prices and stuff as well. So there's a lot of things contributing to that. But there's a lot of confidence there. I think it's a little bit, you know, dangerous in some ways, because it is, again, pricing out, you know, despite all the incentives and things there for first home buyers, it's also pricing out, you know, first home buyers. You know, you can't really get into the Sydney market anyway with that sort of price points, you know, trying to buy something for under 750 and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, a lot of those sort of people, those families are moving to those regional markets to try to get into something. And other people are sort of, you know, rent vesting is becoming very prevalent. People are just sort of, you know, continuing to rent where they want to live, or where they need to live, sort of close to work, and then they'll end up buying an investment property, which would be in an outer suburb or a regional market that they can afford to buy into. So, a lot of those sort of trends continuing to happen.
Yeah, sure. With your book, Positively Geared, like it's from a lot of things you were saying, it's probably a little bit more clear to people listening as to why you may have written that. But was there an initial kind of catalyst? At what point during this whole journey of yours did you sort of say, I'm gonna write a book now, you know, about this? You know, what was that? Was there a specific point, or was it, you know, more of a transitional sort of period where you were thinking about, you know, really great ways to help people, and this just...
Yeah, it's an interesting point. So the book was written, it was published last year, so it's still a relatively new book. It's only been on the shelves for 1 year. It's a bestseller, so it's doing really well. I think I first came up with the concept about, you know, only about 2018, and I probably was thinking a little bit about it beforehand, but it's certainly not something I've been planning for years. And the thing about the book is, I basically, my message is, you know, if I can do it, so can you. So for me, I didn't write the book. You know, a lot of people write books and put out ebooks because they're trying to market their business and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't do it with that purpose. And obviously, I've had a lot of, you know, people come to work with me because they read the book, and that's been fantastic. We had to help more people. But the purpose of writing the book was simply to try to inspire people, because I actually felt I had a story to tell. And, you know, I'm generally sort of pretty humble, so I don't really sort of, you know, talk about it or think about it that much. But I did get to that point, you know, which is probably about 3 or 4 years ago, where I was thinking, like, I do have a bit of story to tell, because I, you know, I came from, you know, sort of a farming background, working class parents out in Orange in New South Wales, didn't have a lot of money. And then I went and sort of studied music, became a music teacher, still wasn't earning much money. But then I did grow a significant property portfolio and achieve, you know, quite a lot of lifestyle goals, and which included my property portfolio, you know, getting more, you know, passive income from the rent than what I was earning as a teacher. So I was able to retire from teaching and so on. And I felt that, you know, I want to sort of get that message out to show people that that can be done. There's a lot of people, probably a lot of sort of spookers and stuff out there that, you know, always trying to offer people financial advice and, you know, ways to become, you know, financially free and stuff. But I'd kind of done that. So I kind of wanted to, you know, just put that into the book and talk about my journey. So it's not just about, you know, selling a service or anything like that. I talk about my journey. So that, you know, first chapter is sort of about me and my background. Talk about the strategies that I've, you know, I've achieved to get there, but also talk about I use some of my own property case studies as an example, but also some of the clients I've worked with and how I've sort of helped them. Again, not to try to, you know, market my services, but just to, as examples of how I've helped people that were in significant debt, and then they did a couple of developments and they ended up, you know, doing really well and getting back into the black, and how the sort of strategies that helped me also helped some of my clients. And I thought I'd be good to sort of get this message out to help a help a lot of people. And I thought, you know, I can, you know, even as the business grows, I can never help, you know, thousands and thousands of people. You know, there's not that many of us in here. So I just thought one way to help people is get a book out there and they can read about the strategies. And, you know, not everybody who reads the book is going to become my client, but that's not the idea of it. The idea is just to get the message out and help people and essentially inspire people, to make people realize that, you know, if you want to do it, you can do it. And I also outlined my journey that, you know, while I was a teacher, I was also studying my diploma in real estate, but that was a 3-year course that I covered off in 3 months by just sitting up all night and doing that. So again, that came down to my work ethic that I was studying up till about 3 o'clock every morning. Then I was getting up again at 6 o'clock in the morning and going to work. So I was living on a couple of hours of sleep every night while I was transitioning from, you know, teacher into real estate and getting my licensing and all my qualifications. So, so again, you know, just inspiring people about, you know, if you've got the drive, you've got the passion, then you can basically achieve anything. And that's kind of the message I wanted to get out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Was there somebody during that sort of process too? Like when you were, cause you said that you were doing your studies for relating to real estate then too. Before that, I guess when you were a teacher, and you were thinking about like at the very early stages before you had a property portfolio, was there somebody or some other kind of catalyst that made you then, you know, push you more into that area? Or was it something that you had grown up with in your family?
Hadn't grown up with in the family. My family never invested. My dad always said if you can't afford to pay cash for it, don't buy it at all. And that kind of doesn't work in today's property markets. He bought his house for, you know, $20,000 in cash back in the day. But, you know, as with leverage, you kind of need lending and things. Now, for me, it was, you know, I wanted to sort of grow wealth and create a comfortable lifestyle. I did a lot of reading and, you know, same sort of books that all your listeners would have read and things, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki and, you know, quite a few of those sort of books and just got really inspired and then just thought I just want to make things happen. And you know, it wasn't necessarily plain sailing from the start because I had no strategy at first. So I was buying properties and, you know, while they might have been in good locations, they were still sort of negatively geared and they were in Sydney and, you know, I was just thinking like I had quite a few properties and quite a lot of debt and not much cash flow. And I was thinking there must be a better way of doing it than this. So, you know, because I know that there's, you know, been lots of people that made a lot of money from properties. So I had to figure out a strategy and figure out how I was actually going to make money and actually make all my money work for me in property as well. So it was a bit of trial and error there. And of course, yeah, not all the properties I bought were great properties. You know, I've bought some duds along the way and stuff as well. So, you know, learnt along the way. But even those lessons I've learnt are really good because I've been able to use as an examples of, you know, to my clients of what not to do and everything like that.
Well, you sort of have to, don't you? Yeah, I don't imagine there's really anyone who's done anything that's been really worthwhile that has known everything from the start. That just doesn't happen. You know, you just have to go through those things, don't you?
Oh, definitely. No, you definitely need to make those mistakes and everything, for sure. So that's part of it. I don't think any successful person has done, you know, been successful without making those mistakes at some point.
Yeah, I mean, as annoying and frustrating as all that is, and it'd be amazing just to, you know, to enter into anything and know exactly what to do. But I guess you can. That is, I suppose, then, like you were saying, that just goes back to reasons why you wrote the book. And why you're doing what you're doing, hey, you know, because like you can, you know, if if you can help other people, ultimately, you know, it makes, is as corny as it sounds, you know, it makes the world a little bit of a better place. You know, I hate to use that, I mean, a sort of term, but I think it's actually true. You know, I think if you put stuff out there that you know, genuinely, you know, helping people, and that they can, you know, ideally make less mistakes that you had to make, which you go, I mean, that's great. You know, it's always a help, isn't it?
Well, that's what it's about. It is about trying to help people. And I think the way to have real happiness and, you know, be content in life is being able to get out there and help people. You know, it's not about yourself. And I think, you know, certainly in more recent years, you know, now I've got a young family with a couple of young kids and everything. And, you know, for me, I realise it more than ever. You know, it's really about what you can do for other people. And that is one of the catalysts for writing the book is, you know, just put something out there, just help people. And, you know, I've received lots of lovely messages from people who've read the book and they've, you know, and they've been inspired and they're giving it a go themselves and stuff. So, you know, that's been fantastic. And that's what it's about. Because for me, you know, being able to help people and you know, that's why I sort of, you know, do a bit of, you know, charity work and stuff like that. And I've got some quite big goals in the future and I've outlined some of them in the book as well, some of the things that, you know, I'd like to be able to do in the future, you know, helping, you know, third world countries, places like Nepal and Africa and stuff. And, you know, if I can assist there with building, you know, building schools and housing and education and stuff like that, then that's the sort of stuff that I'd love to be able to do through our business as the business grows and stuff as well. So there's always a bigger, in business, there's always a bigger thing than just doing it about me. And often, you know, often even people ask me, you know, why am I doing this in my business if I, you know, if I've just got this portfolio, shouldn't I just retire and sit on the beach? But, you know, I couldn't think of anything worse than just being on the beach all, yeah, forever. You know, it's good to have a bit of a holiday, but for me, I love to be active and love doing things. And, you know, if you grow a business and you're employing people and then you can help things that are a greater cause and bigger than what I am individually, then I think that's what it's about as well. And that's, so, you know, when client fees come into the business, you know, we you know, use them wisely. It's not just about, you know, it's not just about me making money, you know, it's a much bigger thing to the scenario than that.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, you don't necessarily want to be that, you know, the person in the stock photography who's like sitting on the beach in the, you know, the deck chair with their laptop, do you? You know?
No, that's right.
and I mean, there's like a certainly, yeah, I don't know if that even happens, to be honest, but it certainly can with a laptop if you wanted to, but, you know, it does, I guess, like you alluded to there, that as well, that becomes then the norm. You know, it's nice to have a break. Yeah, everyone likes to have a break, but, you know, I sort of like to be busy too and do things. And if you can certainly channel that energy over to helping other people, that's fantastic. You know, I think it's awesome. I had a like as we're getting, I guess, towards the end of the podcast, I just had probably a couple more questions. One was a bit more specific about something that you mentioned in relation to the book, where you talk about managing a low maintenance rental portfolio. Could you just elaborate a bit on that more? I'm like, I know it's probably, it outlines it well within the book, but could you just speak about that? I was just really, fascinated about what that would entail for people, just as an overview.
Well, I think the main thing about that is when you buy investment properties, you should have a property manager looking after it. Some people worry that if they have properties, they should be managing it themselves, and it needs to be in a location that they can get to, and that comes back to, you know, buying the wrong location and things, because they've got to get to the property and then, you know, sort out the, you know, maintenance issues. But what you need to do is have a property manager in place, and sure, you might pay them a bit of commission out of each month's, you know, rental, but, you know, that's tax deductible, but it's also you know, money well spent. And things become very low maintenance if you have someone managing the property who can collect the tenant's money on your behalf. They can follow up late, like any late payments from the tenants. If, you know, if the air conditioner breaks or something like that, you know, you're not getting a phone call at, you know, midnight because something's going on, you know, the property manager will deal with that and everything like that. And the property manager will just call you if it's something urgent. I usually have, you know, in my tenancy agreements that if the repair is going to cost less than $500 and they can just go and do that without my permission anyway, there is going to be more than that and they just need to speak to me about it. So it depends how much interaction you want there. But low maintenance is that, you know, once you've found your property and so got property for you and you've settled on it, then it should just go in and should be bringing you cash flow. You shouldn't be feeling that you've got to do everything yourself. So, yeah, I highly recommend people have a property manager on board.
I'd certainly agree with that too. And, yeah, I guess that also comes back to what you were talking about earlier with having a good team around you too, hey, you know, people that you trust, you know, because everyone's, like in every industry, everyone's not equal. So finding someone that's good and someone that you trust and, same things we were speaking about earlier.
Yeah, a property manager is going to be part of your team as well, and finding someone and asking them questions and finding someone who does, you know, have that experience to manage a property. They're not managing too many properties. Are they a specialist in property management, or are they really in sales and just doing a bit of property management? So, you know, lots of questions there to ask and everything as well.
Yeah. So I guess just in closing then too, would you say that, I mean, the things that you talk about, you know, I know this is quite, broad. So, answer it in your own sort of way. Like, is this dream or concept for what you talk about in the book, is this for everybody?
Well, it's basically about, like, everybody's goals and everybody's idea of, like, a dream home, everybody's idea of financial freedom is all different. So I'm very open and transparent in the book. I talk about what my dream home was and the dream home that we're living in now, which is, you know, on the water and stuff like that, but it's like the fourth home that I've lived in, so I've had a number of stepping stones to get there. Other people's, you know, dream home might be that unit, or might be that you know, that little house near the city, or, you know, some people's, you know, idea of retirement is to sort of work part-time and be able to just have enough money on the side to pay for their kids' education and stuff like that. So that's why, again, strategy is important, because, it's not one size fits all. It doesn't mean everybody should be buying that, you know, that really expensive mansion in the city suburbs or anything like that. It's not about that. And it's not about becoming like a multimillionaire. It's about doing something that's going to comfortably help you to achieve what your idea of a dream lifestyle is for you and your family. So it is for everybody, and also from whatever starting. And this is where it's important, and I would like to be able to work with anybody. So if you've got a really low budget, then there's still strategies and properties that can be a good starting point for you. So if you've only got a couple of hundred thousand to spend on a property, then there's certain properties around at that price point, and then we'll set a strategy about how you can actually force value into that property to allow you into another property. So, you know, you don't need to have millions of dollars to start off in a portfolio either. And that's why, I've got the tagline in my book, How to Start Multi-Million-Dollar Property Portfolio from a $40,000 Deposit, because I had about a $30,000 deposit when I started my portfolio. So you know, you can build up from there. So, yeah, it certainly is for everybody, absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. Thanks, Lloyd. And as we talked about before, I'll just ask you also if you'd like to let everyone know what your quote is. For everybody listening, if you've listened to other podcasts, you'll already know this, but we always have some sort of quote that's either relevant. And Lloyd, it's yours. The floor is yours.
Well, my quote is make your money when you buy, not when you sell. So that comes down to making sure you buy the right property, paying the right price for it, because if you overpay for property, then you're going to miss out. So make your money when you buy basically means, you know, getting it for the right price, making sure there's equity in there, buying it under market value. And that's one of the mottos that I live by when I'm building up my portfolio.
Yeah, that's a beauty. That's super, super sensible. And I think inspirational in its own way too, because it's really practical, and I like that. That's great. So just before final wrap up, Could you let everyone know the best way to find you online, get in touch, or anything else you'd like to let everyone know about?
So the business is ozpropertyprofessionals.com.au. Get in touch that way. You can find us online then. The book is available online, anywhere, Amazon, Booktopia, those places. And also in Collins and Dimmick, so pretty much most bookshops you're walking to, you should be able to get a copy of it as well. So positively geared. So yeah, I'd recommend people having a read of that. And always happy to have a chat with people. See what people are up to, see if there's anything I can do to assist them, even if it's not as a buyer's agent, but just to give them a bit of advice to see where people are and if they need any help with anything.
Yeah, no, thanks so much, Lloyd. It's been a real pleasure, and thanks. Thanks for sharing everything. It's been really great.
No, I appreciate it. It's been great, a lot of fun. Thanks, all.
Yeah. So with that in mind, that's actually it for today, guys. Thanks so much for listening into our podcast yet again. Before we go, please leave your feedback as well as any suggestions for any future topics you would like us to discuss in other episodes. Thanks again for listening to the Grow Your Business podcast, and we'll see you again soon. Bye, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business podcast.